Well, tonight we're going to continue our 7-year journey through the Bible and specifically the Old Testament, and even more specific than that, the book of Genesis. We continue this tonight. Remember, you only have 3 more weeks we'll be done with Genesis. So only 3 more times to hear this if you don't have it memorized by now. I know you do. But the word Genesis, what does it mean, class? That is right. Gold star for you. Beginnings. Because so much has its beginning in the book of Genesis. Man and marriage and government and evil and all these things really start here in the book of Genesis. And we've been using this idea of beginnings as kind of the dividing outline for the book. The first 11 chapters is the beginning of all nations. Your story, no matter what your ethnic background, comes from the first 11 chapters of Genesis. We are all descendants of Adam and Eve. Even closer, we're all descendants of Noah and his family. All of our story is included in those first 11 chapters. But then the Bible gets real specific in chapter 12, because chapters 12 through 50 is the story of the Jewish nation, where we learn about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph. And the reason the Bible is getting specific is because the hero of the Bible... Second question, I know you're going to get right. The hero of the Bible is who? Oh, I'm so proud of you guys. Yes, Jesus. And so we're seeing the foundations of the Jewish nation, because Jesus in his earthly body was absolutely a Jew. And so we're heading toward the New Testament by seeing where the Jewish people that Jesus will be a part of came from. And tonight we're getting to that final section in that outline. We're beginning to study the life of Joseph. It's amazing to realize that 1/4 of the book of Genesis is dedicated to the life of Joseph. And what that makes that so amazing to me is creation is 2 chapters. The flood is 3 chapters. Joseph gets 14 chapters. Just shows you how important this guy is. And as we begin to study this life, the life of this important man, the life of Joseph, we're going to see, first of all, a couple levels of information as we go through these things over the next 3 weeks. The first thing we're going to see is the story of history. There's a dramatic story that tells us how the Jews end up in Egypt. And it's very interesting, and there's parts of it in all 3 of the weeks we're going to look at. And then secondly, the story of God's providential hand. We're going to see that God is just taking care of his people. He's taking care of the Jewish people by working behind the scenes. And then thirdly, and most importantly, we're going to see all throughout the next 3 weeks, pictures of Jesus. There are over 300 pictures of Jesus through the life of Joseph. And I just encourage you, over the next 3 weeks, sometimes read through these chapters, starting in chapter 37, and just see how many pictures of Jesus you can find in these last few chapters. And I think that's why Joseph gets so much press, because creation is cool. I love learning about the flood and the Tower of Babel. But the hero of the Bible is? Yeah. Right. And so Joseph is this great picture of Jesus. He wasn't Jesus. He wasn't perfect. But he's a great picture of Jesus. And so I'm excited that we get to see him, because that's what's important for the, you know, for us to learn according to the Lord. You remember the Mount of Transfiguration when Peter, James, and John are up there on the mountain and the Lord appears with Moses and Elijah, and Peter, love him, opens up his big mouth and he says, "Let's make 3 tabernacles, 1 for Moses, 1 for Elijah, and 1 for you, Jesus. And God, the Father, steps in and says, "This is my beloved son. Hear him." He's so much more than Moses and Elijah and everyone else we give attention to. Jesus is who we need to really focus in on. And Joseph is a great picture of Jesus. And we start tonight, we're going to see the first part of Joseph's life. We can summarize by thinking of that old Western starring Clint Eastwood. We're going to see tonight that Joseph's life, you remember that, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Well, some of you say, woo. Anyway, so I guess Clint Eastwood was a good-looking man back then. Anyways, but We're going to reverse the order a little bit. We're going to see tonight as we come to see Joseph, we're going to see the ugly, we're going to see the bad, and then we're going to see the good part of his life. And so starting with that first one there, we're going to see this ugly beginning to his story in chapter 37. If you look at verse 1 with me, it says, "Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. And this is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpha, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. And also he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, 'Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright, and indeed your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf.' And his brothers said to him, 'Shall you indeed reign over us? Or shall you indeed have dominion over us?' So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreams still another dream. And he hasn't learned his lesson. So he told his brothers, he said, 'Look, I have dreamed another dream. And this time the sun and the moon and the 11 stars bowed down to me.' So he told it to his father and his brothers. And his father rebuked him and said to him, 'What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come and bow down to the earth before you?' And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Then his brothers went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, 'Are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them.' And he said, 'Here I am.' And he said to him, 'Please go and see if it's well with your brothers and well with the flocks, and bring back word to me.' So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he went to Shechem. Now a certain man found him there wandering in the field. And the man asked him, 'What are you seeking?' And he said, 'I'm seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they are feeding their flocks.' And the man said, 'They have departed from here, for I heard them say, let's go to Dothan.' So Joseph went after his brothers and found him in Dothan. Now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near, they conspired against him to kill him. Then they said to one another, 'Look, this dreamer is coming. Come, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit. And we shall say, some wild beast has devoured him. And we shall see what becomes of his dreams.' But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, 'Let us not kill him.' And Reuben said to them, 'Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to the father.' So it came to pass, when Joseph had come to his brothers, that they stripped Joseph of his tunic of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into the pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they came down to eat a meal, and they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing spices and balm and myrrh on their way down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, 'What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. Let us not our hand be upon him, for he's our brother and our flesh.'" Nice guy, this guy. "And his brothers listened. And then the Midianite traders passed by. So the brothers pulled Joseph and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. Then Reuben returned to the pit. And indeed, Joseph was not in the pit. and he tore his clothes, and he returned to his brothers and said, the lad is no more, and I, where shall I go? And they took Joseph's tunic and killed a kid of the goats and dipped his tunic in blood, and they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, we found this. Do you know whether it's your son's tunic or not? And he recognized it and said, this is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces. And then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. And then all of his sons and daughters arose to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted. And he said, for I shall go down to the grave and my son in mourning. Thus his father wept for him. Now the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. Chapter 37 is a really ugly look at how sin can create divisions in a family. Joseph is favored by his father. And it came about because of the fact that Joseph's mother, Rachel, was Jacob's favorite wife. And it was her that he wanted to marry in the first place and worked 7 years for. And this favoritism comes out again as Jacob gives his son a coat. A coat the Bible calls of many colors. Now, as I've shared with you before, as a great Bible scholar, I've worked hard to uncover some ancient photos of what we're reading about. Only here at Calvary Vista on Wednesday nights have I been able to show you a baby picture of Esau and a wedding photos of Esau. We have one more tonight, and that's Joseph in his coat of many colors. So we've uncovered this from the Middle East. So there it is. He actually had two. The Bible isn't clear about that, but he had two coats of many colors. No wonder his brothers didn't like him. That's some crazy outfit there. Okay. That is really not a picture of Joseph in his coat of many colors. Really? I thought it was. In fact, and we can get rid of those coats. Joseph's coat may not have been colorful at all. Your margin might have a note that says, a more accurate translation is, a coat that was long-sleeved. You see, if you understand the culture of those days, those that were placed in position of authority were given a coat with long sleeves or big sleeves. And they did that so they could keep their documents and other important information on them, much like a today's briefcase or backpack. And in contrast to the workers, they would wear sleeveless coats to give them more mobility while working in the field. So you see what Joseph does by giving this coat to Joseph is he's elevating him above his brothers. And you add to this clear favoritism that Jacob is showing him, Joseph starts having these dreams. And the first one, there's 12 sheaves of wheat, and 11 were bowing down to Joseph's sheaves. And his brothers, Joseph is so excited to tell his brothers about this. You know, as we go through the life of Joseph, there is no sin of Joseph's recorded. Now listen, that didn't mean he didn't sin. I'm sure he did sin. You know why? Because the Bible says we are all sinners and fall short of the glory of God. The only one without sin is also the hero of the Bible, and his name is? Very good. So Joseph, no doubt, had issues in his life. The Bible just chooses not to record it. But even in this story, we see that Joseph is a little young and naive. Why would I say that about the hero Joseph? Because he thinks it's a good idea once God tells him that his brothers are going to bow down to him. He says, let me share with you, brothers, what God has told me. Not understanding how his older brothers were going to respond to that. So because of his dreams, Joseph has, and because of the way his father treats him, this creates great division between Joseph and his brothers. And a quick word on that. To those of us that are parents or grandparents, Jacob shows favoritism to one of his children over the others. And the result is pain for all involved. And Jacob should have really known better, shouldn't he? Because he was the less favored child. His father, Isaac, loved Esau because Esau was a hunter. He went and got him tasty game. And so his father, Isaac, loved his older brother, Esau. So Jacob knows what it's like to have a favored brother. So you'd think that would get it out of his heart and life, but he doesn't. He favors Joseph. Now, for those of us that are parents, those of us that are grandparents, how can we do this? Because again, sometimes we don't mean to do it, but we elevate certain characteristics, godly characteristics in one of our kids and pointing it out to the other kids. It just kind of elevates the other kids, the one kid above the other kids. So how should we do this? Well, consider the way God handles his children. I'm always blown away by Hebrews chapter 11. We are quite a ways off from getting to Hebrews chapter 11, but when we get there, it's fantastic. It's the hall of faith. You guys know that. This hall of faith, Hebrews chapter 11. But if you read it carefully, God is not telling the full story about what each of these guys go through. I mean, he says, Abraham is a great man of faith. And he was. He trusted God when he was, 90 years old, that God was going to give him a child. But God doesn't mention anything about Abraham going down to Egypt and lying about his wife, Sarah, and having to get out of that pickle and then doing it again with, Abimelech. It doesn't mention any of that. It doesn't mention that Moses doesn't want to speak to Pharaoh or Jacob leaving Bethel. It doesn't say anything bad about Samson or David. And there was a lot that God could have said. Now, while things were happening, like in the actual story, as we seen with Abraham, as we've seen with Jacob, God absolutely corrects his kids as parents should. But what I see in Hebrews 11 is God also looks for the good his kids are doing, and he highlights that and focuses that and points that out as he publicly talks about them. And so too his parents. Of course, it's our job to correct what needs to be corrected. Don't misunderstand me. But another part that we have with our kids, with our grandkids, is to discover their highlights and lift those up, emphasize those, especially if they have multiple kids. Part of the wonder of being a parent is discovering and encouraging those things in each of our children or people that we're involved with if you've never had children. Jacob doesn't do this. He favors one of his sons and causes grief for them all. But back to our story, Joseph's brothers are watching their dad's flock just north of Shechem. Why are they there? Because remember, that's where their dad had been. Dad spent 8 years living in Shechem, this ungodly city. And even though Jacob's doing well now, the boys were affected. It reminds me of what happened to Lot earlier in the book of Genesis. Abraham leaves Bethel, heads for Egypt. God calls him out. Abraham repents, and he was fine in the end. But his nephew Lot, when he was given a choice, when they separate, and he said, where would you like to go? It says he chose Sodom and Gomorrah. Do you remember why? Because the plains reminded him of Egypt. You see, Abraham was able to get Lot out of Egypt, but he was never able to get Egypt out of his nephew Lot. And I see the same things happening here with Jacob. He got his family out of Shechem, but Shechem is still in his boys and in their heart. So anyways, they're in Shechem. Joseph is sent to them, and they, as soon as they see him, they're like, we're going to kill him. And Reuben steps up. He tries to intercede for his brother, maybe because you remember, maybe you don't want to, that Reuben isn't good with his dad at this moment. Why? Because Reuben shacked up with one of his stepmoms. Anyways, but so maybe he's trying to get in good with dad. And so he's like, oh, I'll save Joseph. I'll bring him back. Dad will finally be okay with me. But the brothers who throw Joseph into this pit, did you notice then they sit down for lunch? How cold hearted is that? They dump their brother in the pit and they're like, hey, you want a ham sandwich? It probably wouldn't be a ham sandwich because they're Jews, but want a peanut butter and jelly? Want a turkey sub? Like, I don't know what they were eating. Falafel, probably, you know, but what are they going to have? They're eating lunch while their brother's like, hey, get me out of the pit. Like, they're hardcore. And if you don't think they are, then they see a tribe of Ishmaelites and Midianites on their way to Egypt. And the reality is they think we can raise some money off of our brother. Let's sell him for 20 pieces of silver, which means there's 10 brothers here. But Benjamin wasn't involved in this. That means they each get 2 coins. That's hardcore. Like, yes, 20 pieces of silver is a few months' wages. So that makes a lot of sense. But they get 2 coins apiece walking away from this. Man, their hearts are a long way apart from where God wants them to be. But then Reuben comes back. He's, where's the brother? And to cover themselves, you notice what they do? They rip apart Joseph's robe. They cover it in goat's blood. And they let their father make his own conclusions. And how ironic is this? That the brothers deceive their dad by killing a goat. Does that remind you of anybody? Yeah, it's exactly what Jacob did. He deceived his father into believing he was Esau by killing a goat, and his mom made it taste like venison. So this is how sin is. When sin is not dealt with in our lives, precious church, it comes around again. And sin is bad, but it is doubly bad when it's now in the life of your kids and your grandkids. And I'm not here tonight to book you a ticket on the condemnation train. I just want us to see how serious this is so we can say, God, deal with me right now. Just like Jacob should have done. Deal with me right now. Deal with my deceiving. Deal with this right now. So it doesn't come out in the next generation. You know that the God we serve, he can bring beauty out of ashes. He can give us the oil of joy for mourning. God can turn things around in your family. That's the God you serve. Amen. Don't listen to the lies that the enemy will tell you that it's too late. That is a lie from the pit of hell. But listen to the heart of Jesus that says, tonight is a great night to say, I'm ready to head in a different direction. You're ready to let God start to fix these things. Well, Joe gets sold into slavery, and unfortunately, things will get worse for him. Now, we're going to skip over chapter 38. Why? Because we already covered it. We covered it last week, and it's super disgusting. So who wants to read that chapter again? But if you missed it, it's on our Wednesday night study last week as we were just kind of talking about all of Jacob's children. But let's get now to the bad in chapter 39 and 40. We spent a great deal of time on Sunday talking about the temptation of Joseph. If you missed last Sunday, again, I can't encourage you enough to listen to it online or on our app. The 30-second overview is temptation happens when desire meets opportunity. And that's what we see in the early verses of chapter 39. Joseph is a good-looking young man. His mom was beautiful and form and appearance, and that's exactly the way Joseph is described. You add to that the fact that Joseph has been bought by Potiphar, who was an officer of Pharaoh. And we pointed out on Sunday that almost always that Hebrew word translated in English as officer almost always refers to someone who was a eunuch. The eunuchs high up in Egyptian government, even though they could not have normal marital relationships with their wife, were given a wife instead or for ceremonial reasons. You got to take someone to the dinner parties. However, with that information, we also know from Egyptian history, not some musings of a pastor, from Egyptian history, it was normal and even expected that those ceremonial wives would take on a household slave to fulfill their needs for intimacy. And so we see the temptation. Joseph is a really handsome young man. At home, Potiphar has a wife that is no doubt beautiful because Potiphar was powerful, and yet she is lonely. She throws herself at Joseph, and we see Joseph in the first 12 verses of chapter 39 overcome unbelievable temptation. And again, we looked at how last Sunday in a message that I entitled Overcoming Temptation. And if you missed it, man, you can learn a lot by how Joseph overcame temptation, how we can overcome temptation, no matter what it is that you are tempted to do. When we last left Joseph on Sunday, about to sneeze, that's, oh, here we go. That was kind of awkward. You said, bless you. He does every day. Potiphar's wife, when we last left Joseph, Potiphar's wife had grabbed a hold of his garment and Joseph runs away and she's left holding his clothing. So we pick up the story with where we left off on Sunday. That's verse 13 of chapter 39. So hopefully you've made your way past chapter 38. Find verse 13 and we'll get to the rest of the story that we did not cover on Sunday morning. It says in verse 13, so it was when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them saying, see, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came into me to lie with me. And I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. So she kept his garment with her until the master came home. And then she spoke to him with words like these, saying, the Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came in to me to mock me. So it happened as I lifted up my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled outside. And so it was when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, your servant did to me after this matter, that his anger was aroused. Then Joseph, master, took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. And there he was there in prison, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whenever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it to prosper. Potiphar's wife is crying out, he tried to rape me. And when Potiphar gets home, she tells her husband the same story. And it says there in verse 19 that Potiphar's anger was aroused. But notice, church family, it doesn't say at who. It doesn't say at who. Personally, this is just my sordid opinion, I think Potiphar is upset at his wife because he's gotten to know the character of Joseph and he no doubt knows the character of his wife. And so he is angry at Joseph. He could have had him killed. Attempted rape of a government official's wife is a death sentence in ancient Egypt. But the fact that Joseph gets put in prison, and not just any prison, a prison for the king's prisoners to boot, kind of like, you know, your club fed or whatever they call those things where the white collar criminals end up, whatever. So I have no idea how the prison system works, so I shouldn't talk about it. But he's put in something like that instead of the common prison. It's really telling what's happening behind the scenes. Potiphar has to do something because his wife's accusation of a slave. Joseph is a slave, but he doesn't probably believe her. He likes Joseph, so he puts him in the king's prison. And once he's there, notice what happens next, chapter 40. It says, it came to pass after these things that the butler and the baker and the candlestick maker, no, it doesn't say that. The butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And the Pharaoh was angry with the two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them and he served them. So they were in custody for a while. Then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, had a dream, both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. And Joseph came to them in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of the Lord's house, saying, why do you look so sad today? And they said, we have each had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please. So the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, behold, in my dream, a vine was before me, and the vine were three branches, and it was though it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters brought forth ripe grapes. Then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into the Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said to him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Now within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to your former manner when you were his butler. But remember me when it's well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. For indeed, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I've done nothing here that they should put me into this dungeon. And when the chief baker saw the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, I also was in my dream, and there were three white baskets on my head. In the uppermost basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, and the birds ate them out of the basket on my head. Man, I don't interpret dreams, and I know this is probably not a good one. So Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation of it. 3 baskets or 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree, and birds will eat your flesh from you. Now it came to pass on the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief butler and the chief baker among his servants. And he restored the chief butler to his butlership again, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Man, in chapter 40, notice the character of Joseph. Things are pretty rough in his life. We can agree, right? He's been sold into slavery, thinking it can't get worse than this. Yes, it can, Joe, because you're going to get sold in the house of a guy named Potiphar, and he's going to love you, but his wife, well, she's going to love you too, but in a different way, and it's not going to go good for you. You're going to refuse her. She's going to accuse you of rape, and you're going to end up in prison. And yet now that Joseph is sitting in prison, he is still trusting the Lord with all that he is. How do I know that? Because when he sees these two guys, first of all, notice he notices they're sad. What happens when we're all into ourselves? I'm having the worst life ever. My life is terrible. Everybody hates me. Nobody loves me. Going to the garden to eat worms. You know what we don't see? Other people and their problems. We've all known people like this, right? You know, they're just like, you can come up to them and you're like, hey, how can I pray for you? And it's an hour-long story of every terrible thing that's ever happened to them. And then you're just waiting for them to say, like, how can I pray for you? That question never comes, does it? It never comes. They're just so sad about themselves. They don't mention or don't know anything else. And again, these people that are so sad, if they did know the Lord, if they were walking with God, their faith has been destroyed. This is not Joseph. He notices they're sad. He still believes God has spoken to him through dreams, because when they say they have dreams, yet they don't have an interpretation, Joseph says, hey, God interprets dreams. Tell it to me. In other words, Joseph is saying, I believe God is going to do these things he said in my life. He interpreted my dreams. He doesn't say, I used to believe in dreams. He says, this is what God does. You tell me, I'm going to show you. And again, this is the way you and I should be. You know, how do we get through our difficulties? Well, you've heard the old adage, joy, J-O-Y. And it's an acronym for Jesus, others, you. It's a little corny, but that's okay. I like corn. It's fine. But it shows you what our perspective is supposed to be. Our focus should be on who's the hero of the story? Jesus. He's the hero of your story too, by the way. Our focus should be on Jesus. And then, as our focus is on Jesus, next, we should open up our eyes and and look to others. How can I help you? How can I minister to you? So often we think if I just take care of myself, if I just spend all my money on me, oh, I'm going to be so happy. Those are the most miserable people in the world. That's never what it is. God, how can I minister to people? What can I do? I will never forget for the rest of my life the day my doctor called me and said, has anyone called you about your test results on cancer? And I was like, who else would call me? I was just like, if you're my doctor, you're going to call me. No, no one's called me. Have you called me? No, then no one's called me. And he just says, you have cancer. And doctors, sometimes. We don't know what stage yet. We don't know, like, what, are you going to die? Like, it's just, you have cancer. And he said, you should have an appointment with an oncologist. I was like, all right. Hung up the phone. I was like, the rug was just pulled out from under my feet. Because I didn't know. I didn't know if I was going to make it. I didn't know if I had 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years. If it was going to be able to be treatable, as it was, obviously. Praise the Lord. I'm still here. 5 years later, 6 years later, 7 years later. Long time. 8 years later. Let's get that accurate. 8 years later. Praise God. But that was a Tuesday, and on Tuesday afternoons back then, I used to go, I lived in the desert, but I would go to the high desert, and I would teach at the Bible College South, at the CBI campus. And man, part of me was like, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to teach today. I'm going to get someone else to cover this class. I just found out, I don't know, I might be dying. And the Lord was so clear to my heart. Nope, you're going to get in your car, and you're going to go teach those kids the Word of God today. And I was like, but I'm focused on so many other things. And Jesus is like, get thee in the car. Get thee up to Joshua Tree and get thee in the pulpit. And I did. And you know what? It was just what I needed. Like the whole drive. I don't know what's going on. I opened up God's word. And I'm like, let me pour it up. And it was like, the Lord knew. It's like, yes, you're not. And I wasn't focused on me anymore. Because I had things that God wanted me to do. And I share that with you, not to be the hero of a story, because I believe me, I'm not the hero of the story. I had many times where I pulled over and I'm like, Lord, why are you doing this to me? But I'm telling you, because if you're going through something tough, you got to get your eyes on Jesus. You got to find out, how can I serve others? And then thirdly, take care of you. It's okay to take care of you, but just have the right priorities. Joseph, he doesn't shake his fist at the heavens. He doesn't get upset. He's looking around. He notices that these two guys are sad. And he says, what happens? We had this dream. We don't know what it means. He says, you go ahead and tell me. And the butler says, I had this three vines. And then after three vines came, man, I was restored back to Pharaoh, and I put my cup in his hand. And Joseph says, this is what God told me it means. You are going to get restored to your previous position. Apparently, there was some assassination on Pharaoh, and Pharaoh didn't know whether it was his butler or his baker. So when the baker hears this amazing interpretation, he says, I had a dream too. I had three baskets on my head, and there were birds eating the bread out of the baskets. And Joseph says, oh, I know what that means too. After 3 days, Pharaoh's going to take your head from you. And he's going to hang you out there, and birds are going to eat your flesh. Not good to be the baker. He probably made Pharaoh a Caesar salad. That's what I think he did. Think on it just a little bit. Just a little bit. Come on. It's my job to keep you awake on a Wednesday night. That was good. He made him a Caesar salad. Pharaoh and Caesar. Anyways, no, never mind. If I have to explain it, forget it. But the dreams come to pass. The butler is restored, the baker is put to death, and yet verse 23, it says, the butler forgot Joseph. Now, church, we're getting to the end tonight, but I just want to point out what must have that been like for Joseph. Because you see, all the trials he's gone through so far, the first one he can blame his brothers. My brothers are idiots. They hate me. They sold me into slavery. It's their fault. And then, you know, that he's got that little lady, Potiphar's wife. She falsely accused me of rape. It's her fault. It's her fault I'm in this prison. But God is still using him. God is using him to interpret dreams. And this butler still forgets him. When did the time come in Joseph's life where he's starting to go, are you against me? I could see it was my brother's fault. I could see it was Potiphar's wife's fault. But God, are you against me? Because, you know, we read these chapters and we're done with our Bible study in less than an hour. But, you know, chapter 41, verse 1 says, it came to pass after 2 years. Maybe he'll remember me. He'll tell Pharaoh I'm innocent. And days turned into weeks, and weeks turned into months, and months turned into 2 years that Joseph just sat there. No doubt thinking in his weakness, God, why are you doing this to me? I know I would have those struggles, but I'm trying to be faithful. I'm trying to serve you with all that I am. God, what are you doing? Please understand, Joseph didn't have the next chapter to read. He didn't know what was going to happen. He saw his circumstances. He knew things were tough, and yet the Bible never records that he shakes his fist at the heavens, because he probably just kept putting those things inside, saying, God, I'm going to trust your character over my emotions and feelings in this moment. And that is such a good thing to do, but I just want us to understand, why would God do this to someone that was super godly? Joseph is a really godly young man. That's what we mentioned on Sunday. I mean, if most of us, when we were 18 years old, hundreds of miles away from home, some beautiful woman. How many of us would have been like, I want to honor the Lord with my life? Most of us, when we were 18, that would have been the last thing in our thought. We're like, hello, my name is, here's my Instagram. Like, you know, that wasn't, Joseph didn't have that. But Joseph's a great guy. So what's God doing? Listen to me, you that are hurting. Listen to me, you that are going through trials. So often in our trials, God does it for many reasons. Sometimes he's given you a heart so that when he gets you through it, you'll be able to comfort others with the same comfort that God comforted you. I can't tell you how many people I've met in the last 8 years going through cancer and just said, hey, here's what God did for me. Here's what God shared with me. Here's what he taught me in those times. How many times I've dealt with kids that are 12, 13 years old that have diabetes, and just being able to say, hey, man, I've had it since I was 10. And they'll tell you that giving shots ends up being like brushing your teeth. And I thought they were lying to me when they said that, but I forget if I give a shot or not. How can you forget if you stuck a needle into your leg? I do all the time. And I can minister to these people because I've gone through it. That's one reason. But another reason, listen to me. Is God works things into you through your difficulties that he can work into your life no other way. I wish we learned the lessons on the mountaintop. I wish when everything was good, we're like, Lord, I'm learning so much about trust in my mansion with my Beamer. I'm learning so much about trust, Lord. But that's not the way the human heart works. It's when we're in the valley of the shadow of death and the only thing we have is Jesus that we learn that Jesus is the only thing we truly need. That's where we learn it. And the Bible backs up what I'm saying here. Psalm 105 speaks about this exact thing. And I want you to hear this or see it behind me in the Young's literal translation. Speaking of Joseph, it says, they have afflicted with fetters his feet until iron entered his soul. Oh. When I'm going through hard things, I love that verse right there. Yeah, sometimes it feels like they're hitting you with fetters. Whatever a fetter is, I don't know. I just don't want to be hit with it. Chains. It just seems like you're chained. And you think, where are you, God? I'm telling you, he's putting iron into your soul. He's putting things inside you that can be no other way. And you think, why would he want to do that? Because some of you, he's going to do something in your life that if he told you right now, you'd be amazed. And if you're thinking, well, I'm a little too old for him to start doing things, do not forget that someday you're going to take your last breath here and your next breath is going to be in heaven. And the book of Revelation tells us that you and I, us, we rule and reign with Christ. You have no idea what God has for you. And I tell you, because I love you, some of you need some iron in your veins. Some of you need that because God is going to get you ready to do something fantastic in your life, in this life or the next. And so he's got to put some iron in there. We see the ugly and the bad, but then, oh, God doesn't waste his lessons, right? Because last chapter tonight, we see the good. Look at chapter 41. Oh, I'm so glad there's a next. Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. And behold, he stood by the river, and suddenly there came up out of the river 7 cows, fine looking cows and fat. And they fed the meadow. And then behold, 7 other cows came up after them out of the river, ugly and gaunt. And they stood the other cows on the bank of the river. And the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 fine looking and fat cows. See what I'm telling you, honey? Fat cows are fine. About me, certainly not about her. That's not true. And I would never say that. Just want to make sure you're not sending me an email afterwards. You're like, what did he just say about his wife? I said that about myself. Fat cows are, anyways, I better move on. If I would just stick to my notes, these things would go so much better. And I just think, I got a good idea what to say. Shut up, Pastor. Anyways, here we go. Wow. So Pharaoh awoke. He slept and dreamed a second time, and suddenly 7 heads of grain, good, let's talk about grain, came up on the stalk, plump and good. And then behold, 7 thin heads, blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the 7 thin heads devoured the 7 plump and full heads. And so Pharaoh awoke, and indeed it was a dream. And it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men, and Pharaoh told them his dream. But there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. And the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh and saying, I remember my fault this day. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants, he put me in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker. We each had a dream one night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now there was a young Hebrew man with us, a servant of the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. And each man he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came to pass just as he interpreted for us. So it happened. He restored me to my office, and he hanged him. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon and shaved him and changed his clothing. And he came to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that you can interpret a dream. So interpret it. So Joseph answered Pharaoh and said, it's not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And then Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, in my dream, I stood on the bank of the river, and suddenly 7 cows came up of the river, fine looking and fat. And then they fed on the meadow. Then behold, 7 other cows came up to them, poor and very ugly and gaunt. And their ugliness I've never seen in them in all the land of Egypt. And the gaunt, ugly cows ate up the first 7, the fat cows. And when they had eaten them up, no one would have known they were as ugly as they were at the beginning. So I woke. And also I saw in my dream, suddenly 7 heads came up in 1 stalk, full and good. And then behold, 7 heads withered, thin and blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the thin heads devoured the 7 good heads. So I told this to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good heads of grain are 7 years. The dreams are one. And the 7 thin and ugly cows, which came up after the 7 years, are 7 years, and the 7 empty heads or blighted east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt, but after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten, and the land of Egypt and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following it. It was very severe. And the dreams were repeated to Pharaoh twice, because this is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt, and let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land to collect 1/5 of the produce of the land in the 7 plentiful years. And then let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. Then that food shall be a reservoir for the land for the 7 years of the famine, which will be in the land of Egypt, and the land may not perish during the famine. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh, in the eyes of his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find such a one as this man, in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Inasmuch as God has shown you all of this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. You shall be over all my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand and put it in Joseph's hand to be clothed in the garments of fine linen. He put a gold chain around his neck, and he had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, "Bow the knee." And so he set him over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh also said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh. Without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Ziphnath-Parnepha, and he gave him as wife Asnath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. So Joseph went out over the land of Egypt, and Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh. He went throughout the land of Egypt. Now in the 7 plentiful years, the ground brought forth abundantly. So he gathered up all the food of the 7 years that were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities. And he went up every city and food and fields that surrounded them. And Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the seashore, until he stopped counting, for it was immeasurable. And Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of the famine came, from Asnath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. Bore to him, Joseph called the name of his firstborn Manasseh, for God had made him forget all his toil in my father's house. And the name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. Then the 7 years of plenty that were in the land ended, and the 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph said, and the famine was in the land, but all the land of Egypt there was bread. And so when the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried out to Pharaoh for bread, and then Pharaoh said to the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph. Whatever he says to you, do it." The famine was all over the face of the earth, and Joseph opened up the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine became severe in the land. So all the countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine was so severe in the land. And that last phrase is what's going to lead to next week, how Israel, the land of Egypt, or the land of Israel, the family of Israel, gets to come down into Egypt. It says it came to pass. This verse, starting out in chapter 41, verse 1, it came to pass. That is so comforting to me in trials. Things get bad, circumstances are hard, yet I know God is at work, but it's hard. But precious one, you got to hear tonight, eventually what you're going through will come to pass. And when it comes to pass, I don't want to be embarrassed whining in the corner when it does. I want God to say, "Well done," don't you? Pharaoh has a dream, no one can interpret it. Then the butler says, "Oopsie, I forgot this dude 2 years ago." And they bring Joseph out. They shave him, because in that culture, all men were clean shaven on their heads, so cue ball style. And they shave Joseph and bring him before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh says, "I hear you can interpret dreams." And Joseph says, "Only God could interpret dreams." The gusto on this boy. You see, Pharaoh thought he was a god, but he cannot interpret dreams. And Joseph is basically saying, the true and living God, he'll interpret this for you. He'll interpret you for you. And he interprets his dream, the 7 fat cows, the 7 plentiful stocks. There are 7 years of plenty that are going to come, and then there's 7 years of famine. And Joseph even gives the Pharaoh national policies, national strategic policy advice. He says you should take a fifth of it and set it aside and give it. This is pretty bold for a slave. Pharaoh's told by Joseph, not only will I tell you what the dreams means, I'm going to fix your national crisis. And even Pharaoh can see something's different about this guy. And in one moment, everything changes for Joseph. Everything changes. He's probably malnourished, beaten on a regular basis, wonders if he'll ever see the light of day away from that prison. And yet in one moment, he is second in command of the greatest empire on earth at that time. And church, this is an actual position we have learned. The colorful coats, that's fake. This is real. Archaeologists have uncovered documents about ancient Egypt, and this position that Joseph was given was called the vizier. And we've learned that he was responsible for far more than handing out food. He was responsible for trade deals. He was responsible for taxation. He was married to the priestess of On. The priest of On was the third most powerful position in Egypt, and so he married his daughter. And listen, he would have been responsible for all the other palace staff. Which brings up an interesting thought. Ever wondered what it was like when Potiphar came home for work that day? His wife says, "How was your day, dear?" "Oh, good. You will never guess who was made the new vizier of Egypt today. You'll never forget. You'll never guess who my new boss is." "Who?" "Well, let's just say, I hope your story was straight about you and that former Hebrew slave." "Former? Did he die?" "Nope. I report to him mañana as my new boss. And he said he wants to talk to me about something." "What do you think that is, honey? What does he want to say?" Joseph becomes the vizier, and archaeologists have found written records in Yemen about a princess of the land that date to this time. She was trying to buy the vizier of Egypt off, and she calls him Joseph. You see, this is not a fairy tale. This is a true story. And I know we know that, but I get excited when they dig stuff out of the sand that just verifies that this book is telling you a true story. He wakes up one morning as a forgotten slave. He goes to bed the next night as second in command over the entire nation. That's amazing to me. But I want to leave you with this tonight. That can happen for you. You have no idea. Everything can change in a moment. I don't know if you've heard it yet, but I'm going to put this slide on with the name of this song. Do yourself a favor. Look this up on the way home and listen to it and let it bless your heart. It's a song called Saturday by Benjamin Hastings. The first line of the song is "A lot can change in a day." Yeah, totally can. A lot can change in a day. Just wait another day, the song says. Could be two prayers away. God's going to change everything in your life. It could be three dawns until stones start rolling out of the way. God can change something so quick. And the heart of God for you tonight is just keep holding on. Don't blame God. Don't shake your fist at the heavens. Don't get bitter. I love what Joseph names his sons, Manasseh, which means causing to forget. He wasn't dwelling on all the wrong things done to him. He was naming his kid, "I've forgotten all the wrong things done to me." He names his kid next one Ephraim, which means "I will be doubly blessed." No hint of bitterness, no hint of anger. This is what I want for my life, and I know you want it for yours. So we need to put away the pity party and self-focus and say, "Lord, I'm going to be faithful right where you have me. I'm going to be faithful in this tough marriage. I'm going to be faithful in this dead-end job. I'm going to do this because my life has always been about the Lord, the Lord, the Lord." And in one day, He can change absolutely everything. Amen to that. Amen to that.